I found in DC politicians galore. It looked like a pedophile ring. Literally, around the White House, there's like all of these homes and businesses that are registered to sex offenders that work for DC, that work for NARSOL, which is like a government agency that helps sex offenders get back into work.
Of the Sharpton Report, I'm your host, Sam Johnston. We're found on YouTube, iTunes, Blog Talk, and you can find me at Twitter at Sam T. Johnston. This is the part of the show where most hosts would ask you to subscribe, but I'm not going to. Anyway, we are going to be talking about a rather challenging topic tonight because of the nature of how disgusting it is and how just straight up evil it is. And we are joined by an investigative reporter who's done a lot of research on that. Her name is Melissa Zachariah. I hope I said that right because I practiced beforehand because I didn't want to get it wrong. Okay, good. And we are joined by her. She's got a great documentary coming out called Kids, Inc. And so, Melissa, a.k.a. The Honeybee, how are you doing today?
I'm awesome. Thank you for having me on. It's been a crazy last couple of years, but making this documentary has been a blast, but also very sobering. So we're really excited that it's wrapping up soon and we're going to be able to send it out to everybody and show everybody what we found.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. And we'll get to the documentary, but first I want to know who you are, where do you come from, and how did you get into investigative reporting?
Sure. I'm a New England girl. I've been here all my life. I, you know, went to high school, went to college. I've always been very active in the community. I did a lot of child care and ran child programs in my teens and early 20s, doing camps, and I was a preschool teacher, so I'm very interested in the well-being of children. But on top of that, I was always very curious. I was politically active. I was an activist at a young age. I marched on Washington, D.C. back in the day against George W. Bush when he was going in for the war, very understanding of 9/11 when that was going on. So I've always kind of had my finger on the pulse of conspiracy fact, I guess you could call it, just looking a little further into what people are finding for information as opposed to getting the spoon-fed media narrative, you know, that most people are accustomed to. So with that, you know, huge YouTuber. I loved watching YouTube videos. I probably spent way too much time watching YouTube videos for the last 8 years. But, you know, once the Podesta emails came out and people were starting to get involved in the citizen research, I decided I'd start making my own content. And that rolled into just looking at Pedogate, which is the cover up of pedophilia on many levels throughout the world. I kind of went off a little off my own path with that kind of research, looking at politicians and local leaders that were getting arrested and then going back and working for the city or the town. Just really interesting stuff that it kind of went along with the Pizzagate stuff. I did look into the Pizzagate stuff often, but it wasn't really my main topic. It was more pulling it all together to kind of prove that these things are going on in many different places. So that's kind of where I started meeting a lot of different researchers. That's where I met Heather and Anthony, my production manager and director. And we decided that we wanted to make a movie and document a lot of these cases because I had a lot of people reaching out to me, victims of SRA, satanic ritual abuse, people that had their kids taken away with fabricated evidence, trying to fight the system in their local courts alone. We've been to court with families. We've tried to help people just build that community and try to build up communities within their own communities, because that's kind of what's lacking. And I think that's one of the main points in the documentary, is kind of like a call to action for people to like talk to their neighbors and know what's going on in their own towns. And they can start at that local level with helping people and protecting the kids.
Yeah, it's odd to see this type of thing start to come more to light. It's been good in one sense. People are starting to become more aware of what's going on. But at the same time, they're trying to shift that Overton window to make it okay. You have things coming out of certain large media outlets saying, like, interviewing pedophilias and trying to make them play the victim card. It's so odd to see that as an effort. Why are they trying to do that? What's the point behind that?
Well, there's a lot of different reasons. And I, you know, you're talking about Salon and the New York Times, and, you know, even a Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg is interested in lowering the age of consent to 12 years old. These things are very dangerous, and it's a dangerous narrative when the mainstream media is kind of holding a flag for these people. Pedophiles are men and women that want to have sexual relationships and are sexually attracted to little children, prepubescent children. We're not talking about, you know, 15, 16, 17 in relationships with maybe 18, 19 year olds. We're talking about adults wanting to have relationships with babies. this is very dangerous. And this campaign, I think, has its roots. And I know a lot of people can't wrap their heads around this, but it has its roots in communism, where access to children is very sought after. They want to get the children young. They want to get them militarized, brainwashed, and trained to follow suit with that sort of thing. And NAMBLA and the RWL, which is the Revolutionary Workers League, who started BAM. And I don't know if you guys remember when BAM went to Berkeley and was trying to destroy and flip over cars and blow up things at the rally there. But the RWL and NAMBLA, the North American Man Boy Love Association, they teamed up back in the 80s, and they wrote sort of a manual of common ideas and common goals for the children. To lower the age of consent, to get them to vote, like no age limit on anything, curfews, being able to have relationships and be with adults. I mean, these kinds of things are sick, but I also think it's access to children as a whole. I mean, we're looking at Hollywood right now, even politicians, lobbyists, and military and law enforcement officials, high level, that are getting arrested for having relationships with children, child pornography, distributing, creating, or receiving. This kind of, you know, law-changing movement might be to have more access to children so that's not looked down upon by the society. I don't think it's ever going to be normalized. I think we have a really strong base of people that have been watching this for a very long time. I mean, you have the Franklin scandal, you got the Hosanna Church case, a lot of these, you know, age-old stories of really powerful people abusing children. I think enough people understand what's at stake here that they will absolutely fight against that sort of normalization.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because it's shocking when you hear about it, when you talk about it. It hits you right in the heart, for sure. And a lot of people just want to close their eyes to it because it is so hard to look at. And that's something that I've always admired in you and people like Craig Sawyer, who go at it on the front lines to take it down. And this is a problem that people encounter often when they talk about any fringe topic, because it is so hard to wrap your brain around some of these things. So I wanted to ask you, how do you keep your faith and how do you keep your joy so strong when looking at such darkness in the world?
You have to let God take over, and you have to pray, and you have to know that Jesus wants you to have his word and his life. He wants you to mirror that in your own life. So faith for me, it has grown exponentially since being involved in all of this, but it really does provide me with a strength and a purpose to keep going. I know sometimes I'm a little too bubbly sometimes, I think, when I talk about this stuff. But in a way, it's almost like I have to do that to mm-hmm. protect myself, because it is very dark stuff. And I look into it every single day. My full week during the week, because I work on the weekends, my full week is dedicated to this kind of research. And it's nasty, nasty stuff. I mean, I really don't go on the dark web anymore because it's really dangerous to go on there. But it is horrible what is going on behind the closed doors and behind the curtain. It's disturbing, and it doesn't leave you. It stays with you forever, and it makes you want to fight even harder. And I think that hopefully people they can see that they can be a part of the solution. And I think it takes a lot of people to be able to make this an issue that, the government looks at or the MSM looks at. I mean, if we all are so loud and we keep pushing forward and don't stop, even if we're being censored, even if we're being shut down, there's more of us than there are of them. And there's more good people in this world than there are bad people. And whether you're a Christian or you're not a Christian or whatever you are, the kids are the main topic here. Helping them, saving them, preventing this kind of stuff. Not all of us are parents. I'm not a parent yet. But it scares me to death. It scares me to death that children are being victimized like this and that there's actually a campaign to normalize it. Now, the people online that we deal with on Twitter, there is a lot of people that are very open about their pedosexuality. They call it MAPS. They call themselves minor attracted persons. This is so dangerous that they're even allowed to be online because grooming is actually illegal. Federal law prohibits grooming of children. But in a way, being allowed to come online and talk about these things in good light, there are young people on Twitter that may fall into that trap. So I think it's grooming. I think we have a legal battle that we could possibly push forward to get these kinds of people offline. It's going to take petitions and a lot of crying out to stop it, but you would be disgusted by some of the stuff that these people defend. Incest. I mean, even that guy in Virginia running for Congress or whatever. I mean, he's like all about incest and pedophilia, and it's like, what is going on here? Like, we are the end times. Like, it's like craziness, upside down world that we're living in. But it's written that, we will win and we will stop it. So that's a lot of where my faith comes from, is that, I know in my heart that we are going to be successful and righteous in all of this. So.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up not allowing these people to go online and speak about these things, because on one hand, it's like, yeah, let's do that. We don't want, obviously pedophilia is spreading that message or trying to reach kids. But on the other hand, you get into the dangerous realm of free speech. And how do you balance those two ideas when talking about that?
Right, and that's why I'm talking about the grooming, because law does state that grooming is illegal by federal law. As a pedophile, you already pose a threat to children because you're out there advocating for sex with children. A lot of them say that they would never touch a child, but these people are anonymous. I don't know who they are. I don't know if they've been arrested and convicted of past crimes against children. Are they even allowed to be online? These are things that are very important questions to ask when you have a pedophile claiming, I have free speech, I can talk about these things. There is a line that needs to be drawn. I am totally for free speech. I think that everybody has a right to their opinion and to express that. I'm not a huge fan of censorship, that is for sure. But when you get into a legality where there is criminal activity that is possible to go on, I mean, I couldn't say here that I want to, shoot the president. You know what I mean? I would get in trouble. I'd have 100 FBI agents.
Unless you have a popular late night TV show. Other than that, you can't say it.
You're right, exactly. Unless you're protected by everybody over there in the elite echelons of society. But you know what I'm saying? It's the same thing. There are some things that you really can't say. And the free speech people are constantly saying that, you can't say this, you can't say that, it's against this. You know what I mean? That there's always this slippery slope with the free speech. I think there is a line that needs to be drawn when there is a child that could be harmed involved. I think it's a legal thing.
Yeah, and that kind of leads us to, so what I do is I always let people know, I let the audience know if I have a guest coming on, so it gives them an opportunity to pose any questions. So if you want to know that, you have to subscribe and all that fun stuff. But someone asked kind of along the same lines of this, and maybe we kind of already answered it, but I'm going to pose it to you anyway. It's by Panix07. They asked, how do you as an investigator distinguish between someone who jokes about pedophilia and comments that reveal someone as a pedophilia?
So if someone's joking about pedophilia, I mean, like, for example, can you give me an example? Like, if someone, like that guy on Guns, Jamie Guns, joking about pedophilia, how do I deal with that? I mean, obviously, it's very distasteful. I mean, I don't think there's any law that would prohibit him from, saying anything like that. Should it be looked into a little bit further? I mean, anybody joking about pedophilia is very suspect to me. My concern is definitely people that are anonymous that are really campaigning for pedophilia. As for those that are speaking and making jokes about having sexual relationships with babies and children, I think you need mental help, and I think you should have an eye on you. And I don't follow those people, and I will speak my mind. I will use my free speech to tell them what I think, and I do that often as well. Is there a difference in saying stuff about children like that in a sexual light? I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you're going to say something that horrible about a child, where is your morals at that point? I really don't know.
Yeah. Have you so you talked about the upper echelon of the elite and trying to reach those people because most of them are involved with this type of thing. Have you noticed a change since Donald Trump has come into office? Has it become easier? Has it become harder? What have you noticed?
Well, see, I'm not like a right winger or a left, Democrat. I'm kind of in the middle. I'm more of a libertarian constitutionalist. I feel that there's been a lot more spotlight on arrests of pedophiles since Trump has been in office. And I'm not sure if that's because of the Podesta emails that we're all talking about, the news stories that may be underreported. But there are a lot of statistics that show that there has been many more arrests, major stings with the DOJ and FBI of taking down large pedophile rings in this country over the last year and a half. So, I feel that there is a big difference there. Unfortunately, my opinion on Trump, there's a lot of things I like about him, and there's a lot of things I don't like about him. There's a little bit of a divide there. And a lot of my followers are MAGA, 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 and I love them all. That's fine. I do have some Democratic friends along in there too, and I just feel like the politics side of this, for me, it's a bipartisan issue. And so I don't really look to the government to say, oh, you're doing such a great job. I mean, I think we need a total overhaul
Yeah.
of what's going on in our government right now. But yes, I do feel that there has been a lot more activity since he's been in office, for sure.
I really just wanted an honest answer. I wasn't trying to lead you either way. I know a lot of
No,
times,
no problem.
a lot of times, well, in our community, a lot of times it's like you have to support Trump and everything that he does, because if you don't, then you aren't one of us and you hate America. And it's like, well, I appreciated your answer of just, well, he's done good and bad things. So, yeah, I get where you're coming from though, for sure.
Yeah, I love America. I mean, I love this country, and I will do anything to make this country as good as it can be. I want to keep America awesome because I think it's a great place. It's one of the best countries in the world, I think. But I think the partisan stuff gets in the way a lot of the real true goals, and it really does divide a lot of people. And I don't think I've ever seen a division like I've seen in the last year or so. It's been really, really crazy. But hopefully we'll find solutions to get over that and become unified again. Hopefully when we see these big arrests, when we see people in Congress, like Facebook and YouTube and Google. I mean, I love seeing that stuff. And I think that kind of stuff really brings people together too. Seeing these big corporate, propagandists and conglomerates having to answer questions, from the Congress. So I believe in that part of our country. I just feel like we can do better all the time,
Yeah, well, it seems like a dream to see some of these people go to jail. Like they're so big and they seem so distant from themselves that they're actually a part of it, that all the evidence is there. What do we have to do as a country to move us to a point that will get those people arrested? In our day-to-day lives, how do we move the ship and turn it, to get to the point where we just won't stand for that anymore?
Sure. I mean, I think that the citizen investigations have kind of forced law enforcement and maybe the FBI to start looking into these topics. I mean, I have close personal research friends who have sent major evidence into the NYPD and the DC Police Department. I myself call the FBI and talk to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children with reports all of the time. I've reported the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children to the FBI for not doing the right thing and for blocking people on Twitter and for not putting pictures of children up. We have to have our government be held accountable. It is our responsibility. So I think that the more people get involved, especially on a local level, just learning how it all works, learning the local government, learning how to get together and get a group together and go to your town meeting, go to your city hall meeting, get to know who's in charge and start a committee, start a research group, start a discussion group with people that you live around. Because it's really easy for us to go online and say, oh, well, we want to arrest Podesta. To do that, you need like a lot of people to understand what it takes to get there. So if we all start working in our communities, looking out for each other in our communities, I really think we can get those bigger guys because more people will start understanding, okay, we're the ones that need to direct our government and what direction they're supposed to go. And I think it's actually working. I really do. I don't remember this many really famous people and really high up people getting arrested all in the same like year period. You've even got the Bronfman, Claire Bronfman, was just arrested a couple days ago for being involved in the sex trafficking with NXIVM. I had tweeted about this a few months ago, and I'm like, are you getting scared, Claire Bronfman? All your cultish people out there, she's lawyering up with a guy that's in the district attorney's office. We saw it coming, and finally she gets arrested. That's a huge win because we're all staying on top of it. Somebody's watching and listening, and I think they have to follow through when people are being the squeaky wheel. They have to do something and say something about it. So.
Yeah, and that's such a fantastic answer because I noticed when the election came around, everyone's like, "Oh, Donald Trump's in office now. He's going to take care of it. I don't have to do anything." And in reality, if you truth and change is a grassroots movement, it always will be. It's never going to be one person at the top. It's going to be the people down below to actually integrate themselves into their community and actually change things. And you see that with that's why the church is supposed to be set up that way, is a community-focused place. Once you get involved in hierarchies and someone at the top, you get run into problems like with the Vatican Church, then you don't want to go anywhere near that.
Yeah, that's a lot of heavy stuff, especially with the, you're looking at a major institution that stands for peace and love and, caring for humanity, caring for children, and then you see on the other side of that just awful atrocities to children, indigenous cultures, just a lot of scandals and really disgusting stuff. I'm a Christ follower. I am not a big fan of these crazy organized religious institutions that at the top, they're really not good people. I just follow Jesus Christ. He is my Lord and Savior, and he died for me. And that's my story. That's my relationship with him. And I like to talk about him and his story. But I don't need someone, standing over me and forcing me to follow, their way and how to interpret, because what I'm seeing is that there's a lot of corruption at the top of some of these organizations. The Mormon Church, for example, very, very corrupt stuff, scary stuff. We're even actually touching upon that in our documentary. There's a lot of sexual abuse that is covered up in some of these larger churches, and it's very scary, and very sad that nothing is ever done.
Yeah.
They move people around instead of actually holding them to justice. So.
Why do you think that the people at the top, almost every single person, it seems, at the top of these structures gets involved with this pedophilia? Like, what about it, about being in power, makes you fall into that trap?
From what I've learned, that there are a few different reasons. The most common one that I think people can kind of wrap their head around is blackmail. If you want to get into a certain power group, they need something on you. But for me, like that doesn't really answer the question on why so many are caught with child pornography and having sex with children on their own time. So that doesn't, I mean, maybe in some cases, I've heard from whistleblowers that that is definitely a thing that happens. But as for the ritual part of it, I really do believe there is an evil side of this where they gain power from that interaction. I do believe there is child sacrifice. I do believe that child's blood is sought after by these sick people. And it's not just like the people we see on TV or whatever. I think there's like a higher level of people that you never see that are really into this stuff. And it goes back, hundreds of years. And there's a lot of evidence to support that. One thing that's really interesting today is that they are using young blood. It's actually a program at Stanford University. They're using young blood to transfuse into Alzheimer's patients to help with the protein restructuring. So what they'll do is they'll take blood from a young person. This is a voluntary thing right now, I guess. And then they'll take that, they'll strip, I think, a certain protein out of that plasma, and they'll take that and they'll put that into the patient. And then they'll put the blood or whatever back into the young person, or I don't know how it's technically done, but it's in clinical trials and they're doing it. But I think about organ harvesting. And I think about how there are people that wait in line for years and years to get a liver or a heart, you know, whether their case is severe or not. There's a waiting list and there's, you know, it's a lot of money. But there's a black market for that. And it's really, really bad. Organ harvesting is one of the worst things in this world that people suffer from every day. This is a documented fact. So I think about that and I'm like, okay, now they're taking children and adolescent blood and they're using it to make people cured from sickness. This is stuff that you heard about in fairy tales when you were younger, yeah. You know, people drinking blood and vampires and stuff like that. So as I look at the science and the transhumanist part of this stuff, it really makes me believe that this has been going on forever, but they're just finding new ways to have access again, access to children for whatever it is that they need from them. So I really do think it's very real. I don't think it's just blackmail. And I don't think it's just a sexual orientation. The normalization part, I think, comes from that top level, because you've got Anthony Weiner, Dennis Hastert, Jeffrey Epstein. They're, you know, they're serving time for a couple months, maybe a year or two, you know, for raping and abusing young children. And then, you know, they're never heard about again. And whatever they're doing with all of their millions of dollars, all their assets, I mean, they still have all that stuff. They're still living a great life. So this normalization process, when an actual disturbed pedophile sees, oh, maybe it isn't so bad. All these celebrities and all of these political figures, you know, they're all looking at child porn too. They're having sex with children. I mean, it must be okay. There's a problem there, and I think that's a part of the normalization process, is they're trying to make the sick okay with it, so they continue to have this, and it's intergenerational. Families have abuse that goes on for decades and decades, especially in these ritual abuse families. I mean, we've had a family we've been looking at where the father of the son who murdered a little girl, his father back in the 60s murdered a baby with another woman in another state. And this is like incestual intergenerational abuse. And then they kind of keep it, you know, close to that family. So it's very interesting. It's very dark stuff. But to get the whole picture of it, I mean, we really focus on CPS corruption and court corruption in the documentary, but we do touch on that other stuff because I think it's a very important to look at all of it, because it is a very, very armed octopus of stuff that's going on with this horrible, horrible stuff that's happening to kids. But as for like CPS and court corruption, those are things that we as a community can actually do something about. You know, we can help the families. We can be in court with them and sit down and have their back. You know, that intimidates the judge and it intimidates the lawyers, and it really intimidates CPS and the agencies that contract with them, because they're preying on people that don't have a lot of money, that are on SSI, that are on food stamps, people that don't have the wherewithal to represent themselves in court or to even afford a lawyer. Those are the kind of people that are targeted. So when you come in with an entourage of people that have gone through all the paperwork and know, you know, that this was completely fabricated or it was false, things happen. Kids get sent home, and we've had that happen. Thankfully, in one of our cases, we were able to get 5 kids home to their family. So
that's great. It's really great that you're attacking the issue on both fronts, the physical and the worldly realm, as well as the spiritual realm, because everything that we encounter, every single topic in our world has a spiritual aspect to it. And I definitely agree. There's definitely a huge, you know, blood rituals, you know, occult practices being involved with this pedophilia, and it's great to hear that someone like yourself on the front lines is attacking that with prayer and with understanding, with knowledge. And it's also important for other people to know that this stuff is going on. And I hear about this topic, oh, it's not going on in my hometown, and that then they just kind of dismiss it and they say, oh, I can't do anything about it. It's like, maybe not.
Well, I implore people to look at their sex offender registries. You know, don't go stalking people. Don't go harassing people. That is not what I'm asking people to do. I'm asking people to understand what's going on in their community. And if there are people that are registered, you know, in your community that are teachers, that are, you know, judges or a part of the town hall, that have positions of power, say something about it. Call them out. They're public officials. You can call them out. You can say something. And that's the kind of inspiration and power, empowerment that we want to tell people, is that if it's going on up there, it's going on right in front of you, right down the street from your house. Mm-hmm. If it's that bad up top, I mean, you have to understand it's probably probably even worse, really close by. So put your finger on the pulse of what's happening around you. Keep yourself aware and tell your kids to be aware. That's another thing we really like to tell parents, is to have their children understand the dangers of this stuff, especially with the phones and the computer, even just walking to school or talking to your teachers, talking to camp counselors. If kids are prepared and understand, I mean, I don't want people to freak out their kids and have their kids be paranoid, but to empower your child, you know, that they have solutions and, you know, they can tell somebody. They can do something about it. I think we'll have a more strengthened youth. I think that, especially what I was talking about earlier, these evil actors are so organized. They are so organized and they're so successful in their evil deeds. We have to be just as organized and successful in our awesome, amazing, light-filled, Christ-like way deeds. You know what I mean? We have to be just as organized and unified. Because we'll never beat them, you know, if we're not. And especially the evil people that believe in, you know, Satan or Lucifer or whatever crazy thing they think that evil will help them accomplish their goals in life. We have to be just as activated and just as believing of our power from, at least for me, from God, to inspire and to guide my hand and my brain and my mouth to do the things I'm doing. If I don't have that faith and belief, how can I fight these evil people that believe in whatever they believe in, mm-hmm. you know? So I think it's something we can all do. I think it's something we can all conquer together. And I'm really hopeful.
Yeah, amen. Absolutely. We have the power to defeat it. We can take them down. It starts with our own community. It starts with our own heart and our own willingness to drive these issues to light and to truth. So yeah, I completely agree. I'm glad that you're hopeful. Someone who stares in the darkness so much can still come out hopeful. That really speaks to the power that Christ has and the ability to overcome all this darkness that we have. And it's just so important. So I really appreciate that. And so we are about halfway or so in, and I would love to kind of transition, because I do want to keep people encouraged, and it seems like a good transition point to, I would just love to hear a story of just something that you've been able to change someone's life, or maybe reach a kid, or bring him back home, or something like that, just to pull us out of the darkness a little bit, give us some more hope on the things that you interact with.
Sure. Well, for the kids part of it, we were contacted by a family in Ohio. They are really cute and amazing people. They had 5 children taken from them by CPS. This family is actually, they're totally Democrats. They're totally into that. They felt comfortable contacting us, and I was so overjoyed and blessed, because like I said, there's always this partisan thing going on. So I was really happy to have someone from that side of the fence come to us for help and advice. So we heard her story. It was Nikki Lita. She's the one that contacted us. She told us about her situation. Me and Anthony went down there after doing a lot of background research. We do a lot of court documents. We pull information. There's a lot of people out there that have a lot of of stuff going on in their lives, but we need to vet information. We need to have stuff to show people in the documentary. So getting that real documented stuff was important. When we went over there, they were just so, they were so beautiful. They don't have a lot, but they were so accommodating to us. They let us sleep over their house. We didn't have to get a hotel. I mean, these people we just met, you know, they had such Christ in their heart, and they're believers too. We stayed over there for a few days. We went over all their paperwork, and I'll tell you, like, when you're in an empty house where there's supposed to be five children and you see toys, you know what I mean? It's really, it's hard. It's hard in your heart. But, we really, you know, we got down to work, and, I was there over my birthday, and Nikki made me a birthday cake and it was just so beautiful. You know, I was there making a documentary to help them, and they thought enough to make me a birthday cake. That was really very special to me. We ended up going to court with them at the end of all of that. And at the end of the court hearing, the children were granted to go home. I just remember sitting there when they told Nikki and Joseph that the children were going to go home, just everybody started crying. It was really, really emotional. Nikki actually started jumping up and down, and then she started crying. But then we got to meet all of these beautiful children, and it was just so amazing. We were standing outside when the CPS guy came up with his van. The van was filled with a lot of toys and clothes from their local church that had donated them to the children. So along with these five beautiful kids was like a ton of new toys and clothes. We all helped bring it in and set it up. And there was such this excitement and awesomeness. And we took pictures and spent a little time with the family. And then we left to kind of let them reunite and have their time together. But that was just like the most amazing experience that I probably have ever had in my life. Because you always want to see, you know, something happen, a good thing happen, and for kids to be reunited with their family. So actually being there to see that, I am just so blessed. You know, it was just an amazing, surreal experience.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so awesome. And anyone listening to this, that could be your position. You could be in that position if you just educate yourself and go out and look for people who need your help in this field. And it's you. You're starting to hear more about the pedophilia issues, but you don't really hear about the CPS corruption. And I'm really looking forward to when your documentary comes out, because it's going to shine a lot of light on those things. But I guess I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway as for discussion. Is there a conspiracy in that branch of the government to take away kids and put them with pedophilia, or is it just poor government mistakes?
I think it's a mix of both. So you have a system that was set up by the Clintons where there is a monetary incentive for not only foster parents, but also the agencies that work under CPS. Now, Child Protective Services itself is under the executive branch of government, and that is the Department of Health and Human Services. And that overlooks the Food and Drug Administration. I mean, even the Office for Refugee Resettlement, the one that is taking the children, right? But everybody thinks it's the DOJ and Border Patrol, but it's actually the Department of Health and Human Services that's responsible for taking these kids and putting them into these huge camps. But that aside, they oversee the Child Protective Services aspect of this. And then it comes down to the state level where you have like DCF, DFACS, DCYF, like all the different anagrams that stand for your local CPS agency. And then under that are the smaller agencies that contract out to match foster parents with children, as well as do case plans and kind of invade in people's lives on the, you know, the doorstep level. So that basic design, there's a lot of money changing going on there. So you have CPS in each state petitioning Department of Health and Human Services for a certain amount of funding every year. And like any other government agency, you have to prove that you need money. So what they'll do is that they'll tell the CPS workers, the caseworkers, you know, we need to have this many kids. to get, you know, this quota. So you need to make sure you're seeing this number of people on your list. And we have to, you know, get these kids. I'm not there with headphones on listening to these conversations, but it's very clear with a lot of the falsified documents and the craziness I've seen in court cases and all of the CPS workers that are whistleblowers that have come forward talk about this incentive. And not only does the government give them more money when they petition and they can show that they've taken a lot of children, the caseworkers get bonuses for their work for being to rescue children from these circumstances. And then you have the foster parents. Now, this is something that's very alarming that I know a lot of people don't know about. But when you are a foster parent, especially in Ohio, Illinois, I know there's many other states that have this, you have a child in your custody for at least 6 months. Once that 6 month period, the day after that, you will get paid whether the child gets sent home or not. And I'm telling you, in almost every case, the child is taken for 6 months and the CPS, you know, they put the kids either with another family to rotate, or sometimes in, you know, not a lot of times they get put back with the family. They definitely get rotated. It's like a huge racket. So a lot of times the foster parents are very close with the CPS people. Some of them are friends, have been working together for a very long time. You have career foster parents that are really close with management. And you have to think, you know, if this person is literally getting paid. Now, this woman that had the five children, she had all five kids, you know, one of them had special needs. Think about that. And you're thinking $812 to maybe $1,500 a child a month. Think about how much money she's taking home now, even though the kids are home. She's got no kids in her house. She gets that for the rest of the year in her pocket. So for her to be able to get those five kids, somebody's got to be pulling a deal with her. I'm sure she's splitting that money with the manager at Lighthouse, where she was, you know, getting the kids from, with that person. I mean, it's very clear to see when you're actually looking at it. They were still taking the child's health care, the health benefits. They didn't give them back to the family once the kids were there. They took the food stamps, and it took months for them to get their food stamps back for their kids. It's just really sad. It's really a big money game. And, you know, I don't know what's going on with the Department of Health and Human Services, but looking at what's going on with the refugees, the children, how they treat them, it makes you wonder, like, okay, there's 2,000 kids that were involved in that situation. The situation was corrected pretty quickly by Trump. You know, they're going to go with their families, whatever. But there's like 400,000, 500,000 children, you know, that are taken from their families and put with abusive families, put with a pedophile. I mean, we dealt with a family in Arizona where the child was put in a pedophile ring and then taken out of there and put with someone who tried to kill her. Five-year-old wow. kid.
Wow.
You know, a military guy was running the pedophile ring, mind you. So like these kinds of things, you're like, all right, why isn't the Department of Health and Human Services doing anything about it? Are they instigating this? Are they just passive about it? Is there a monetary gain there? I mean, I can't answer the question on who the mastermind of this, but I think because it trickles down to local levels, that kind of racket and that kind of abuse is able to take place. And that's why I think it really has to start in the community, so we can attack it at that end.
Yeah, when you're talking about 500,000 kids, that's a lot of money sitting on the table for people mm-hmm. trying to grasp. And the people in it for the money are not the good, are not the people you want to have the kids, for sure. Mm-hmm. Is there any legislation that or any movement on the legal side of that to kind of to change the way that the foster system is set up? Because it is important. There are some kids that grow up in terrible homes that need to be mm-hmm. brought to the right place. So is there anything coming up that we need to try to support to change the system?
Yeah, people have been chipping away at it. The Safe Families Act just passed, which makes it a little easier for kids to go with like an immediate relative as opposed to going right into foster care, you know, a grandparent, a friend of the family, an aunt, an uncle. That's really important because that step is skipped a lot, and it's very traumatic for a child. not only to be taken away from the parents, but to be taken away from the whole family and to be, you know, shoved an hour away to another school system with strangers. I mean, that's traumatic. So that's been kind of relieved a little bit. Still happening, though, could be better. They also took away a little bit of the interest and the funding, and they put it towards keeping the money for services with the families as opposed to taking the children out. You're giving the family services. So if they're having a hard time, there's drug addiction, you know, there's anger problems, instead of ripping the child out of the home, they're trying to put services into the family and put the money where the mouths are instead of, you know, taking them out and everybody else is getting all kinds of money. And you know, they take kids away and then they make parents get therapy, take drug tests, blah, 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 blah. And all these people are making money. They're trying to put money into the family. Again, not that much. They didn't make a huge change in that. We'd like to see more. So really what it comes down to is petitioning your local congressmen, your representatives on how your local CPS is running, and look at the numbers and check it out, because I think there could be a lot more done. And I always tell people, the service of having someone making sure that children are safe is not a bad idea. You know, I think that there are bad people out there that should not have children, that are hurting their kids, that are raping their kids, that are, you know, drugging their children, whatever. But it's the way that it's set up. There's so much room for abuse and so much room for a racket. It has to be changed. It really does. Like I said, just like the government, it's okay, but it can be better. And it only can be done by us saying that it needs to be better and giving those solutions and being present in those situations where we can actually see change happen.
Yeah, very good. Absolutely. I agree. And so on the line of the legal terms, I did have a question from Gracian Girl 75. She asked, have you heard of what Governor Cuomo plan, New York State Senator, with his plan to do with sex offenders and to pardon them? And he talks about a betrayal to the citizens of New York State. So have you heard about that?
Yeah, she's talking about Cuomo.
Cuomo. Pardoning. I can read. I know names.
Sex
whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there are some different sides of this situation. So you have a lot of people that are sex offenders that aren't quite, you know, molesting children or looking at child pornography. There are sex offenders that might have been drunk one night and went to the bathroom on the side of a tree and the police arrested them and they're a sex offender. There are levels, though. You know, if you're a level one, you could have done that, or you could have had child pornography. Level three is high, which means you probably molested a child or did something really bad or produced child pornography, higher level risk. I'm not sure quite how they're going to do that, if it's going to be a case by case. For sure, like if you made a mistake and you, like I said, if you're a guy and you did your duty in a public place, you still are exposing yourself. So there is a reason why you might be inappropriate for society if you're pulling that stuff out in front of the public. So it's kind of a slippery slope on that level, but it is absolutely imperative that we keep the sex offender registry, because how are you going to know who these people are in your community that might be your Boy Scout leader, that might be your gymnastics instructor, you know, people that have just been arrested in the last 2 weeks for molesting and you know, making child pornography with children. These are really important lists that need to stay put. They have helped, I'm sure, thousands of children stay out of harm's way because parents were able to understand, okay, we're not going to go to this camp because that guy is on the sex offender registry. Why is he working at this camp? I mean, it's very important. We have it. I found in D.C. politicians galore. It looked like a pedophile ring. Literally, around the White House, there's like all of these homes and businesses that are registered to sex offenders. Jeez. That work for D.C.
Jeez.
That work for NARSOL, which is like a government agency that helps sex offenders get back into work, funded by the government. You've got people that work for the IRS, Treasury Department, that are still working there, that are pedophiles. It's just really scary. So I think it's a horrible idea to mess around with that. Are there case-by-case issues? Absolutely. Everything should be taken into consideration, I think, case by case. But, to get rid of a sex offender registry is absolutely dangerous, and I'm totally against that.
Yeah, definitely sounds like a absolutely ridiculous thing to do, which doesn't surprise me that they're trying to do it at that point. So we got about 10 or so minutes left. Was there anything that we didn't get to touch on that you really want to stress some more?
I don't know. I mean, I guess please go check out our trailer for the documentary. I'd love for you guys to see it. We worked really hard in the trailer. We're trying to get a 1 minute trailer, so it's 6 minutes and 15 seconds long. It's a very long trailer. So we're trying to make a 1 minute one so we can like throw it on our channels or our friends want to put it on their channel. But please check it out. Go to our fundraiser page. It's actually an update page. I mean, we're really blessed. We were able to go and visit Craig Sawyer personally. We interviewed him. I was able to meet up with Tracy and meet her and interview her for the documentary. Lots of different researchers that were involved in making this possible. All the families that we have been able to get to know that we're still in touch with to this day. I talk on the phone to some of them still. Just trying to, keep it going and strengthen their hearts in their own organizing in their own communities. They're starting to make committee groups and advisory boards and, getting their neighbors on board with understanding what's going on, whether it's CPS awareness or if it's, corruption in the government. Great example, Heather, my production manager, she's my research partner and like a sister to me. I talk to her every single day. She has started many advisory committees where she lives in Georgia. And she has called out many people that have tried to get elected into office there for crimes against children, for fraud, for many things. So she's blocking evil people left and right because she's involved. She's not like a famous person. She's very quiet. She's not a YouTuber. She just knows that if you want things to change, you've got to get in there and get your hands dirty. And she's like a super sleuth. So the stuff that she finds, I'm just like, Heather, you need to take a break. But she's amazing and just so proud of what she's doing. But yeah, I mean, I love this whole process. This whole community kind of began for me, during the Pizzagate stuff. And I've seen such a huge community effort with the people online, like on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, just like banding together, and doing this crazy research and documenting everything and archiving everything. And it's just, and there's a rush every time, like there's something new found, a new connection is made. Everyone's going crazy, and it's so sad that the mainstream media looks at us and they're like, oh, that's fake news, the conspiracy theorists. We don't feel like that at all. I mean, we are truth tellers, we are truth seekers, and we're so motivated by it. And we don't even care what they say anymore. It's like, oh, you want to call us fake news? We already know that you're fake news. The president is calling you fake news. We're gonna be okay. No, it's just been really inspiring the last couple of years, for sure.
Yeah, man, that's so great. I love the attitude about it. To talk about something so difficult and then come on the other side of it with a smile and hope and excitement, and that's what we need. That's what we need, more positivity, prayer. And it's so good. And I love, that's why I wanted to have you on the show, because of your bubbly attitude towards such a difficult topic. It's the way we fight it. It's to have this joy and this understanding through all of it. Would you list off the links for people to go to support you or to follow you?
Yeah, sure. Definitely follow me on Twitter. I am there a lot. It's because it's easy. It's right on my phone. I travel a lot. I do a lot of different things. So Twitter's like you open it up, you check it out, you post some things. It's easy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you only have Russian bots following you though,
Yeah, exactly. They erased like I don't know, 300 or 400 of them a couple
right?
months ago, but I followed them all back, and they're all my friends again. We chat. The bots are really friendly, and they're actually real. They're alive. It's
Oh,
amazing.
man.
But I'm at the honeybee underscore, so it's that little line that's on the bottom. You can find me on YouTube, although I'm not a big YouTuber these days. The last I'd say the last year I've really toned it down a little bit. Probably like twice a month I put out videos. When I do, they're pretty in depth. But that's the Honey Bee. You can just look me up there. And then you can, like I said, to our fundraiser page, it's at plumfund.com/crowdfunding/kidsinc.documentary. And if you want to go check out there, we have a bunch of updates and people are commenting and saying really cool things. And if you feel compelled to donate, go for it. I'd rather you get on board and join the fight. That is more priceless to me than anything, is to get the information out there and to share the information. And I feel weird about money. I have a Patreon and all that other stuff, but I'm not going to go there. Just follow me on Twitter and get in the game, and
Yeah.
we'll be good to
There
go.
you go. I will try to put those links in the description for people to make sure you stay up to date with those. And I have one more question for you, because I know that I would never hear the end of it if I didn't ask you. Where does the nickname the honeybee come from?
So my name is Melissa, which means honeybee, and that's just the
Oh,
way it is. So,
simple.
and it was really hard. People call me Melissa or Marisa, like they just make up all these names. So I
Marisa?
figured, they know it's different, but they don't remember, so they like make up these crazy names. So bee is like my nickname. Honeybee was like, the easiest thing, and it's so cute and wonderful, and I'm cool with honeybee. So you can call me honeybee if you want.
Okay. I love to find out. I wish I had a cool nickname, but I don't. Oh well, maybe someday someone will come up with an awesome nickname that I'll have,
I'll think of
but
one for you.
okay. I appreciate it. It's funny that the people in this line of work always have cool nicknames. The honeybee, Sawman. It's like you gotta take down the pedophilias to the pedophiles to get good nicknames, I guess.
Oh yeah. I mean, I wish I had a normal name, I guess. I mean, Melissa is kind of hard to remember. Nobody ever gets it right, so I like had to pick. I'm like, okay, what does my name mean? Okay, we'll go with that. Wait, it rolls off the tongue. It's cute. All right, we'll go with
Oh,
that.
awesome. Well, that's it for today's show. I do appreciate coming on the show and sharing the good news and encouraging people to get in the game. So I appreciate it.
Amen. Thank you so much, Samuel. It's been a pleasure, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the show, guys. That's it. You have to, like I say at every show, it's all about the grassroots. You have to get involved. You have to change it if you want change. You can't just sit there and point fingers. You can't just sit there and listen to a fantastic show on topics. You have to actually get out and change things. It's all about controlling your own reality, being out there, being involved with the spiritual aspects of prayer, but also being involved with the legal aspects and changing your local government and finding out who's who and how to change. Because that's what we're going to do. Donald Trump, no matter whether you like him or hate him, he's not going to be the one that changes the world. It's going to be you and me and every single one of your brothers and sisters in Christ that's going to be actually able to change things. So get up, get in the fight, and we're going to win. So at least it's going to be you're fighting for the winning team. That's what we want. Guys, I'm not going to ask you to like, subscribe, or share, but I appreciate it if you do. That's the show this week. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope they have a great week. One other question. I know you're good friends with Tracy, and she killed it at this question, so no pressure. Do you have any favorite jokes?
Oh, I'm like an improv girl.
You don't have one?
Tracy's way funnier than me on the spot. No, I mean,
Oh man, she had
no,
two
I
good
got
she had
nothing.
two good
I'm not a
ones.
comedian. I'm a funny girl, but only at the expense of others. It's got to be in the moment.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
Fair
I've never
enough.
memorized jokes. Do you have a joke, Samuel?
Yeah, but it's not my. I'm the one asking the question, so I don't have
Oh.
to prepare one.
Sorry.
No, it's
No,
okay.
I'm not a comedian.
That's okay. Tracy will just be disappointed in you. That's all. If she ever, if
I'm gonna
she.
call her right now and be like, "You brat." I can cross my eyes and make a funny face. I'll get a lot of funny faces throughout the. I'm sure you can find a good one.
True. That's one thing. If I ever get intimidated by like a guest I have on, I just go to one of their old interviews and just like pause it at random points and it makes me feel so much better.
Exactly. I love that. That's the power.
Yeah.